Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We are halfway through our first show post-Thanksgiving, and there's so much that happened going back even to Thursday. We haven't really talked about the games that took place on Thanksgiving Day, but of course there were major implications there. For instance, the Saints clinched their third straight NFC South title. They beat Atlanta, so a little bit of revenge there after the Falcons beat them at the Superdome. What was it? 3 weeks before that. So the Saints are now 10-2. And with the Ravens beating the Niners on Sunday, the Niners fall back to 10-2, which means the Saints are very much in the mix for the best record overall in the NFC. But they're tied with San Francisco right now for the best record in the conference, again, at 10-2. We know that the Cowboys embarrassed themselves against the Buffalo Bills, and the Bills deserve a ton of credit for that. I'm not suggesting it was only the Cowboys doing. The Bills have become a force to be reckoned with, and so they were able to celebrate on the road. I think, like many of you, my favorite part was Cole Beasley returning to Dallas and doing so much damage, the incredible touchdown, the 110 yards. You could tell that Josh Allen and the offense wanted Cole Beasley to succeed. They wanted to set him up the way that they did. And then, of course, we got some trickeration even going back to the start of Week 13. We've seen a lot of it this week.
From the Cowboys' 28-yard line, Josh under center. A little flip. They're going around. Oh, end around. They're going to throw it. John Brown trying to fire it downfield. He's got Singletary. He's got the catch. He makes the catch. Touchdown. Touchdown. John Brown to motor. Devin Singletary. Touchdown, Buffalo. Unbelievable. What a play. What a play for the touchdown. 28 yards.
Awesome. John Brown, first Buffalo Bills wide receiver in franchise history to throw a touchdown pass. We saw DeAndre Hopkins with a bit of a pitch and a shovel to his quarterback, Deshaun Watson, on Sunday night. So another receiver throwing a touchdown.
Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Julian Edelman of the Patriots threw a touchdown pass not that long ago. And so it does happen. But first time in Bills history that a receiver has thrown a touchdown pass. Again, John Murphy really enjoying that. 9-3 for the Bills now, and 5-1 on the road. Incredible. That to me shows you that they're battle-tested and are forced to be reckoned with. But this is their best mark going back to the mid-90s, and we've talked about this. The last season for Jim Kelly was the last time they had this kind of success. Meanwhile, the Cowboys, as I say, on the wrong end of that one. They've now lost 6 of 9, but they're still first place in the NFC East. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. We're going to get to some of the other storylines, the QB news, also the Iron Bowl. I've never seen an Iron Bowl quite like the one we saw on Saturday between Auburn and Alabama, and just the heartbreak for the Alabama kicker, though this was definitely not his fault. He could have tied the game late, but the loss was not on him. But how often do we focus on the kickers and point the fingers and say, you had one job? Which is why I always remind you that kickers are people too. Justin Tucker happens to be one of the best kickers on the planet. And he nails a big field goal from 49 yards for the Ravens with 3 seconds left against the Niners. And really that final drive for Baltimore was so So indicative of what the Ravens are capable of with the ball in their hands. What do I tell you? Ball control allows you to control the game. Baltimore got the ball back with 6.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter and never gave it up. The Niners can't score. Well, they can with a pick six or a fumble return, so I shouldn't say they can't. It's unlikely that the Ravens, if they don't give the ball up, have to deal with the Niners scoring more points, right? And what do you want to do? You want to keep your opposing quarterback, especially one who can really hurt you like Jimmy Garoppolo, you want to keep him on the sidelines. Best way for the other team not to score points is for them not to have the ball. Duh. Hashtag duh. Hashtag Captain Obvious. But my point is that's what Baltimore wants to do. They want to control the ball and keep it away from their opponents. So they get it back midway through the fourth quarter and they go 12 plays. They convert a fourth and one. They mix up the calls. So it's some good diversity, but it's really all short and manageable. And a lot of that has to do with the weather. Of course, it was crazy, horrible rain and wind. And for them to have the right plays and to be able to not just run the ball, but do the short passes to execute the way they needed to and to get Justin Tucker in position for a 49-yarder, his 15th career game-winning field goal as time expires. That is prototype for the Baltimore Ravens, that second half of the fourth quarter. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, coming up next week, the Ravens get the Bills. It seems like every week Baltimore has yet another stiff test. And so now they're going to go out and they're going to gauge themselves against another playoff team. More than likely, the Buffalo Bills are headed to the postseason. And so think about who the Ravens will play in 4 weeks in a row. The Texans, who right now are leading the AFC South. The Rams, who won the NFC a year ago and are above 500. Still harboring hopes of playoffs. The Niners. Hello, Niners. And now it's going to be on the road in Western New York, Orchard Park, one of the most difficult places to play. I hope it snows. Football in the snow is some of my favorite. And so that's what's coming up for Baltimore. Yet again, they've got another stiff test, and they finish up with Browns and Steelers, too. And so they still have two games in their own division. Why don't we talk about the Browns and Steelers? That, my friends, is a segue, and I didn't even mean to do that. We're going to get back to your calls here, too, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. That's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Pretty confident that the Steelers were not only hearing all about Freddie Kitchens' designer t-shirt, but they were using it as extra motivation. Now, I don't know why you would need extra motivation in a rematch between the Steelers and Browns when they're coming into your house and when they're already your chief rival. However, Freddie Kitchens dialed it up by wearing a t-shirt that said, "Pittsburgh started it." I'm sure you know exactly what that refers to. And so here are the big, bad Cleveland Browns, and they're going in with all their bluster and with all their boldness and with all their brashness. Brashness? Is that a word? Brashness? It sounds odd when I say it. They're going in there like they always do, cocky and confident and talking the talk. But can they walk the walk? It would have been huge for them to sweep the season series with the Steelers. Not only could they say, "Oh, Pittsburgh started it, but we finished it," but in addition, they would keep themselves right in the mix, which is far more important. Keep yourselves right in the mix there in the AFC, potentially for a wild card. Still a long shot if they would have beaten the Steelers, still a long shot for the AFC North title. I was really impressed with the decision-making by Mike Tomlin and his coaching staff. Of course, impressed by the execution for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it was every phase of the game. Now, remember, this was Devlin Hodges, Duck Hodges, who was taking over for Mason Rudolph, so not the same quarterback that started a couple of weeks ago. But it wasn't just Devlin. It wasn't just Duck. It was James Washington making plays. It was the defense coming up with the big plays when they needed to come through. This was the game that the Pittsburgh Steelers wanted to play in what is typically a knockdown dragout.
Steelers trailing 10-3, trying to get more here. Big rush. He throws it long down the sideline, and there's a man under it.
And it's caught!
It's caught
with a marker down. That's a touchdown for James Washington.
Wow.
Yes! Unbelievable!
Mayfield again in the shotgun, gets the snap, throws a pass, and the pass is intercepted! And that's Joe Hayden, the former Brown. He's at the 45, he's at the 50, he takes a dive at the 45, and you can put this one in the history books.
We're looking to strike a blow for team in these circumstances, to stand up for the game of football and team and prove that guys can make plays when given an opportunity. One man's misfortune is another man's opportunity. The standard is the standard, and they made all those cliches, if you will, true.
Well, they certainly did, but we need Mike Tomlin to spit them out at us after the game. So this was actually a 10-0 start for the Browns, and so they jumped out to this 10-0 lead before the Steelers were able to tie the game at the break. And then there were the mistakes that it seems like separate the Browns from where they are and where they want to be. They have a fumble on their first drive of the second half that leads to a Steelers field goal. They have the interception that you just heard with Joe Hayden. They also had opportunities in there to score, to come back from what was only 7 points down multiple times. In fact, most of the second half, they're only trailing by a touchdown and couldn't take advantage of the opportunities, not even when they picked off Hodges. Bill Hillgrove with the calls on the Steelers radio network. And so you're going to hear always Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield say the same things, the right things over and over. But as I've said on this show, and really it was kind of precipitated by a caller, if you're going to talk the talk, you know, I suck at cliches. I'm not like Mike Tomlin. If you're going to talk the talk, you better be able to walk the walk. And they just haven't done it. And I don't know at what point they're not going to give up, of course. But at what point does it become a crying wolf situation? Like, okay, we're just tired of hearing that same stuff. Be able to back it up, please.
We're going to continue the same mindset. We need to be 1-0 at the end of this week coming up. Our guys got a dose of what playoff atmosphere was like. And we need to continue to get better so we respond better the next time out.
Now, if you're wondering, yes, he was asked about his Pittsburgh Started It t-shirt. He says that it was no big deal, that his daughters liked the shirt, and so he went ahead and wore it, and that he said it was really just about that, and he wouldn't have changed it. He says, I wore a t-shirt, I wore a jacket with it, my daughters wanted me to wear the shirt, I'd wear it again. I guess he wore it to see a movie on Friday night or something like that, and of course there was a photo and word got around. And while he can downplay it, certainly inside the Steelers locker room, as I'm telling you, this is a rivalry that was already on fire because of what happened a couple of weeks ago. And Ramon Foster was one of the Steelers to talk about it after the win.
I'll leave it up to you guys, but I know our coach would have never done anything like that. Why throw gas? I know I said I want to answer, but when you do something like that, you throw your players in harm's way. He's not on the field. You throw your players in harm's way when you do stuff like that with a Vanderson. I hate that for them.
So Ramon Foster says our coach never would have done that. And that's true. All right, Mike Tomlin, he wears his professionalism like a badge. Now, every now and then you'll catch him in a moment where he kind of lets loose, like, I just need for Duck not to kill us. Remember, that was the statement going into this game. And certainly he's fiery and he's intense. But there is not a snowball's chance in hell he'd be caught with that kind of a Bush League move. Never, because he knows he doesn't want to stoke the fires, as Foster talks about. And man alive, the Steelers took notice and used that as fuel. David DeCastro, who of course was the Steelers offensive lineman that like laid on top of Myles Garrett once Garrett had popped Mason Rudolph on the head with the helmet. DeCastro said, I thought it was pretty stupid That's a lot of bulletin board material. I don't know why you do that as a coach. I just don't get that. Of course it's going to motivate us. What are you thinking? It's just not smart. And so Kitchens can downplay it, but the Steelers took note as if they needed any extra motivation. Mayfield actually said after the game, it's just a t-shirt. I've done much worse. Truer words have never been spoken. Anyway, it's good for Devin Hodges. Now, I don't know what happens moving forward. They've obviously now used three different quarterbacks this season, and Mason Rudolph had really struggled last year. But for Duck Hodges, for him to come through and get this victory as an undrafted free agent, I mean, just a neat moment for him as well. But for the Steelers, this was huge. Because if you look at the standings now in the AFC North, while they may not catch the Ravens, I'm not suggesting that that's likely, they're three games back. They are very much in the mix in a crowded field for the wild cards. 855-212-4227. We also have QB news from Jacksonville and from Denver. So there's never a week in which we don't have QB news. What coaches do you think should get replaced in the NFL offseason? A-Law Radio on Twitter or on our Facebook page. Thanks for joining us. If you're waking up on your Monday morning, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Shake those cobwebs out, baby. It's time to get back to work. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
The voice of one Nick Foles, who got benched for Gardner Minshew in the second half of the Jacksonville Jaguars' loss to Tampa Bay. And the big reason why? Well, because there were turnovers on the first three offensive drives for Nick Foles. All of them led to Tampa Bay scores, including that one, the fumble recovered for a touchdown. Gene Deckerhoff, the voice on the Bucks radio network. So three turnovers, first three drives, 22 points. That is a really difficult way to start. But it's been tough sledding since Foles returned from his broken collarbone. So in three games, Jacksonville's only scored 33 total points. But if you break it down even further, only 10 points in the first half of those three games. So they're putting themselves in holes that they're having a real hard time climbing out of. Doug Marrone said he wanted a spark in the second half, so he turned to the rookie Gardner Minshew. And against the Bucs, he was okay. 147 yards, a touchdown, but he also had a fumble. He threw an interception, though that one glanced off the hands of D.D. Westbrook in the end zone. And so there were turnovers for both quarterbacks. There were also boos. And I thought it was interesting to hear what Minshew had to say after the game about the response that the crowd gave to Nick Foles.
One thing I didn't appreciate was a lot of the booing today. You know, you got guys that, you know, putting their hearts out there every play, every game. And, you know, nobody deserves that. And I hated how that was. But, you know, I'm also super appreciative of the support I get from the fans.
And so we'll see what happens moving forward. Doug Marrone says he hasn't made any decisions. Foles was signed up to be their franchise quarterback. Obviously, the broken collarbone, being on IR, that interrupts your rhythm and your flow and your communication and your rapport with your receivers. And Minshew was kind of in a rhythm. He had that awful game in London. Their issues are far greater than just quarterback, but this has been difficult for Foles. As you hear him say, it's never fun to get benched, and I'm just going to have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. But he was 7 of 14 for 93 yards and the three turnovers, and just a massive hole that the Jags couldn't even see the top of, forget, try to climb out of. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. A lot of you writing to me and saying Jason Garrett should be fired. And this is with the Cowboys at the top of the NFC East. They could still end up winning the division and winning multiple playoff games. What if they get to the NFC Championship? It's a tough way to fire a coach, right? Arnold says on Twitter, Browns, Panthers, Falcons, Bengals, Raiders, and Redskins. Now, the Redskins already made a change, but if you're saying it shouldn't be Bill Callahan moving forward, the Raiders are not firing John Gruden. I know they're back to 500, but Gruden has really made some positive changes there, and he hasn't lost the locker room. Zach Taylor's in his first year with Cincinnati. They're not firing him either. Well, I guess they could, but I would be stunned. The Falcons had rallied a little bit, but Dan Quinn is definitely on the hot seat. The Panthers with Ron Rivera, they just fell to 5-7 on the season and lost to the Redskins on Sunday. And the Browns, Yeah, that one's tough because I just don't think you do yourself any favors in Cleveland by making yet another coaching change. Again, 855-212-4227. Let's see. Let's talk to Eric, who's in Fort Worth.
Hey, this is Ed in Fort Worth. Amy, I love your show.
Thank you.
I used to work close to Messiah College back in the day. But anyway.
Cool.
I just hate to fire my boy, Jason Garrett, but it's really time for him to go. I don't see any other way we can keep him around. He's just there, and he doesn't assert himself and take chances like when we need to.
So when you think about play calling, the fact that Kellen Moore is making all the play calls, you still think the buck all stops with Garrett?
You know, Kellen Moore is an exceptional play caller in my view. I mean, he's going to have, it's a new, you know, a new grounds for him to do all this. So, of course, we're going to have disappointment. But with disappointment, you're going to have success. And then the overall, you know, of the boat, of the captain of the ship has got to be Jason Garrett to move forward to make those final decisions. And I just think he's just backpedaling every time we need to move forward and take chances.
Yeah, it's been one step forward, two steps back. I mean, the aggressiveness works for some teams. It doesn't work for others. I feel like if you're aggressive and it doesn't work and it blows up in your face, well, then fans complain about that as well. I do think, though, that Jerry Jones deserves credit for giving Jason Garrett as long as he's had. We're not talking about a rash decision. This wouldn't be kind of knee-jerk and quick trigger. And he's definitely not firing him before the season is over, which I also think would be ridiculous. But there's a very real chance that despite what happens, I would agree with you that the general manager, Jerry Jones, decides that this is time to make a change. So we'll see. I mean, he certainly doesn't want a guy who's going to be, I'll just use an example, a Jim Harbaugh who's going to fight him on everything. He doesn't want another alpha male who's going to challenge him because that's what he does. He's the GM. He believes the buck stops with him. So it's a special kind of coach. And I do think Jason Garrett will get another job, but that's one of the reasons why they get along is because Garrett is not all up in his grill all the time, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I feel sad for him, but I just think he's had his time. He's had his chances.
Yeah, he has.
And it's time for him to move on.
I would agree with that. He has had plenty of time. And again, the Cowboys deserve credit for allowing Jason Garrett to stay in place because not very many teams would have been that patient or would have given him these years. Eric, thanks so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Let's quick do one more. Tony's in Cleveland. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, thanks for taking the call. Love to hear your voice in the morning. Wish it were a little brighter for Cleveland, but that's we do that, you know. I feel like it's deja vu here.
Wait, you stopped, too, because you knew I was going to laugh, didn't you?
Well, I'll at least get a chuckle. But, you know, the problem is this. On paper, Cleveland, going into the season, had some of the best tools that there were to win games. I mean, we had some of the best players and with the greatest potential. And a lot of people say with the players that we had on the roster, anybody could win. But I don't agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think you could fill my garage with, you know, the best tools that there are. But if I'm not a craftsman who knows how to use them, we're not going to get a lot done. And that's, I think, the problem that Freddie has. He doesn't really know how to use the tools that he has to the best of their ability. And I think we're suffering for it.
That's an interesting analogy. I like it. My question mark is, you know, the offense, because I mean, the defense has not been great, but the offense certainly, I think, has been the weaker link for most of the season. Without Myles Garrett, though, the defense is different. But he was the offensive coordinator a year ago when they made that run and nearly got to 500 and you know, kind of got everyone all excited. And so I don't know if it's just the extra responsibility. Certainly there's a lot of that. It's having to be the leader and knowing the buck stops with you, and it's all the uncertainty and it's all new for him. And that could be part of it. It's unfortunate that I think they didn't consider keeping Greg Williams around because he had all of that, and Kitchens could have continued to do what he was doing with the offense. So we'll see. I mean, I believe they need experience. I was hoping they would keep some experience. But now that they've hired Kitchens, to go ahead and pull everything up again at the roots and start all over doesn't do the franchise any good.
Yeah, that I don't know how we could do that, to be honest with you. I just don't know how. But again, you know, I think Freddie last year, he had a few good tools in his hand and he made the best with them. That's it. But now you've got a locker room full of some of the best players there are, and I'm not sure he knows how to creatively use them. And I think that they need to really, really push him into using a good, a seasoned offensive coordinator who knows how to best use the tools. He's going to have to step out of that role. He's got too much.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. It could end up just being too much. You're juggling too much, and you try to do a lot of things well. You end up doing nothing with excellence because you've got too much on your plate. Tony, thanks so much for your phone call. Those are good points. I appreciate it. What did he say? Deja Hugh. I actually saw Hugh Jackson's name being bandied about on Twitter on Sunday, but I don't remember the context. Something about how he could be an offensive coordinator. I mean, remember the work he did with Andy Dalton actually paid off with some really good seasons. I just saw this post on our Facebook page. Bob says, it's just a stinking T-shirt. Who cares? He's referring to Freddie Kitchens and the Pittsburgh started it shirt. If you need to be motivated for that game on either team, something's wrong with you. We just got our butts kicked on offense and defense. Still a Browns fan for life. At least we killed Michigan. Oh, he must be referring to the Ohio State situation. Yeah, so I don't know about Freddie Kitchens. I do think that there's a massive learning curve and he's not navigating it very well. But I also have talked about this with the Browns before, with the Cleveland Cavaliers too before that. You can't just keep changing coaches because it does you absolutely no good. Absolutely. All right, 855-212-4227. It's our toll-free line. Also on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on Facebook. It seems like most of you are in agreement about the Cowboys making a coaching change, but who else should see the end of their coaching tenure by the time this season is done?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It was a nice way for the Green Bay Packers to rebound from their loss to the San Francisco 49ers. And to do it in the snow, you know they were extremely comfortable. So it was snowing really heavy at MetLife Stadium about the time the game started against the Giants. But Aaron Rodgers said he felt right at home. 21 of 33 for 243 yards. Of course, they're not going deep downfield nearly as much, but four touchdown passes. And just as importantly, 3 for 3 in the red zone were the Packers. Wayne Larrivee with the calls on the Packers radio network. Defense also had a lot to do with it. There were no official sacks of Giants rookie Daniel Jones, but Green Bay had 7 QB hits. So they were getting to him. They were putting pressure on him. And they also picked him off 3 times and scored 10 points off those turnovers. And so it was kind of a two-pronged issue for Giants coach Pat Shurmur, because not only did he have to continue to work with his rookie quarterback trying to cut down the turnovers, which didn't come to fruition on Sunday, but in addition, how in the world do you contain Aaron Rodgers?
We tried to pressure. There were times when we did pressure. You know, we had some full blitzes in there. We had some structured fire zones, and we had some 4-man rushes, but you can see what happens when you don't get pressure on him. He's really good.
Or when you get 12 men on the field and a flag is thrown and he knows he has a free play, he's also really good then too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Devontae Adams with a couple of touchdowns. First career game over 100 yards receiving for Alan Lazard. So it's good to see him getting into the flow with the Packers and with Aaron Rodgers. As for the Giants, there's a lot of people talking about whether or not they should make a coaching change. Pat Shurmur, now the guy at the helm, with their 8th consecutive loss. Longest losing skid for the New York Giants since 2004. Now, you remember this time last year, they put together a bunch of wins to almost insert themselves back into the playoff conversation. They were at least kind of hovering around the fringes, but they made it respectable with the way they finished up the season. Right now, it seems like it's going from bad to worse for Shurmur and the Giants. And while that's to be expected with a rookie quarterback, the mistakes, they also have a defense that's just devoid of a lot of talent, I guess would be one way to put it. 855-212-4227, our toll-free line, brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Nick on Twitter sends me a GIF of Matt Patricia and says, this guy needs to go. So Matt Patricia on the hot seat in Detroit, that's probably likely the issues for the Lions started before Matt Stafford suffered the broken back, and a lot of them have been on defense, which I think is a bigger problem because he's supposed to be a defensive coach. And he's had a couple of years now to get the personnel in place, but that's not what we've seen come together. It's not been a physical, aggressive defense, and in the NFC North, you can't afford to have a defense that's soft, and that's what it feels like. The Lions are soft. Let's go to our phones here. Theo is listening in Detroit. Theo, what do you think about Matt Patricia?
Matt Patricia has to go. Our defense is terrible. He sent out everybody that's good. If you don't like what he's doing, he's going to send you away. And the difference between all these other coaches that you say must go, when he leaves, the general manager must go because he brought him in here, his buddy-buddy system from the New England way. Good morning, Ms. Amy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you, Theo. I do think that there's something to be said for a coach who strikes out on his own and goes back to players that he's comfortable with. So I don't have an issue with that. I mean, Matt Patricia is looking to build the type of success that New England has. Come on, it's a copycat league. Everybody wants the kind of success that New England has. And that's how he grew. That's how he learned. That's how he developed into a coach. But it's certainly a heck of a lot harder to do when you don't have Bill Belichick as the leader, or when you don't have a Tom Brady, or maybe don't even have the same autonomy that Belichick does. So Belichick essentially makes all the personnel decisions. And while he's got some authority, it's more difficult to do when you're starting from scratch.
If we had any coaches that was any good, it'd be Black Monday today for him, because we'd have got rid of him today. But we don't have nobody to back him up right now.
Oh, that's you mean to fill in as an interim?
Yes, that's the only reason he's not fired now.
Interesting. That's an interesting question. Do you think a year and a half is long enough to give a coach to decide whether or not he can hack it?
If your general manager told you that 9-7 was not good enough, and you haven't won 9 games in 2 years, well, you know, that's what he was told.
Yeah, okay.
Wait for some playoffs.
Well, if that's been the ultimatum and the bottom line, well, then they better follow up on it.
Thank you so much.
Theo, I appreciate your phone call.
Thank you again.
Let's talk to Anthony, who's in Cleveland. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, good morning. How are you there?
I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the Browns real briefly here. And, you know, people will be calling in about Kitchens this, and I agree with you about you can't blow it up now because that's what we've been doing for, I don't know, eons. But here's something I don't think not many people talk about. I think the main reason is we have a rookie head coach and we have a bunch of young players. As talented as they are, that's too much youth, and they don't know how to grow and win together. So if they would have kept Greg Williams or brought in another season coach and let Kitchens continue to call the plays, that might have been a better run. And talent, all that talent we had, they don't know how to win in the NFL, getting obviously immature. See what you think.
Well, I would agree with that. Now, there is a lot of youth there, and they need to grow up together. And certainly, it's a massive culture change. The Browns have gone since Romeo Crennel, their last winning season, and it's been even longer since they've made the playoffs. So they are learning how to win, and they're essentially starting over. John Dorsey's hit the reset button by bringing in all this different personnel with all the coaching changes, which is why I don't think you can be impatient. So I just don't know what good it does you unless you can get Bill Cowher, which maybe Browns fans don't even want, and he's certainly not coming off the CBS set to coach again. He recognizes now that he's got a much cushier, less stressful job. Who else are you going to get? Do you want to start over with another brand new head coach? A Matt LaFleur, a Zach Taylor. Now, I get it. LaFleur has had some incredible success in his first year. It helps when you have Aaron Rodgers. But the idea that you can just sweep Kitchens out and bring someone else in who's got no experience and hope that it goes better. Do you want Jason Garrett? Do you want a Ron Rivera? Those guys might be available. Brian, would you like to weigh in? You got your headphones on. You're ready to go.
I would. I think the guy they go after is Lincoln Riley. And I think Lincoln Riley would listen.
Not if Jerry Jones gets to him first.
That's the interesting aspect of it. But I think the Browns... The Browns have something that Lincoln Riley wants to work with, and that's Baker Mayfield.
Well, I agree, but that doesn't mean that you can coach the rest of it. That's my point, is that if you continue to bring in inexperienced head coaches, they went with some experience with Hugh Jackson, they had some with Greg Williams, but if you keep going back to guys who've never done it before, who need to reset the entire franchise and start fresh, it's hard to bring in a guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
It's certainly fascinating, but when it comes to the kitchen stuff, wouldn't you say that it's better to just cut ties now?
I don't know. But you don't know that it's not working. That's my point, is that I don't think you do know whether or not it's working. You know for certain that there are things he has to work on, but are you ready to throw out the baby with the bathwater? Maybe the expectations were too high. There's also that.
Weren't those almost self-inflicted wounds at that point then?
I mean, there have been a lot of self-inflicted wounds this season. It's just, how do you know he can't turn into a better head coach if you don't give him time? I'll use an example from quarterback. Lamar Jackson, what was the big knock on him, his completion percentage last year? But they're putting him in positions where he can succeed, and certainly he's such a young guy that he can learn, he can get better. So I don't think Freddie Kitchens should be branded a disaster and a guy who can't coach, but I don't think that maybe the expectations should have been as high when he took over. So that's kind of the deal. Really quick, Dave, who else do you think needs to go?
Adam Gase and Dan Quinn.
So Dan Quinn in Atlanta, Adam Gase already after like three quarters of a season. So the New York Jets, of course, just got smashed by the Bengals, only scored 6 points, but they did just have two wins before that. But yeah, it's been on the periphery for them and just kind of a shadow. Interesting. David says on Twitter, Freddie Kitchens with this team is like giving my grandma a brand new iPhone. It's top of the line tech and she's still looking for rotary. My Grammy has a rotary phone. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.